Good evening and welcome to all of you again. Thank you, Arlen, for giving us a good start tonight. Book of Ruth is a fascinating book. And even from the standpoint of critics who look at it just as a literary piece, the critics view it as a literary gem. Although it's kind of interesting. But it goes much beyond that, of course. Just curious, if you had to describe the Book of Ruth in a word or a couple of words, what comes to your mind?
Loyalty.
Okay.
Redemption.
Very good. I thought I heard another one somewhere. Who disobeyed?
Okay.
Go ahead and enlarge on that just briefly. Okay, that's fine. We'll get to. Go ahead, Marvin. Right. Right. That the verse that Marvin was talking about, first chapter, verse 16, it's probably the most familiar verse in the book. And Ruth said, "Entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and whither thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, and thy God my God." And there's a lot. Excuse me. There's a lot that's wrapped up in that verse, and Arlen touched on some of that already. Just wanted to mention before we go further the two reference materials that I used. Neither one did I read in their entirety, but one book, the title of A Conspicuous Love, The Enduring Story of Ruth, Romance and Redemption by Steve Zeisler. And then Shattered Dreams, God's Unexpected Pathway to Joy by Larry Crabb, and both of them sort of go through the book in somewhat different ways, but are both were helpful. And like I said, I didn't read them in their entirety, but I'd like to just to start with read the first chapter. And then we'll go back to the beginning of the chapter. "Now it came to pass in the days when the judges ruled that there was a famine in the land, and a certain man of Bethlehem, Judah, went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. The name of the man was Elimelech, and the name of his wife Naomi, the name of his two sons Mahlon and Chilion, Ephrathites of Bethlehem, Judah. And they came to the country of Moab and continued there. And Elimelech, Naomi's husband, died, and she was left and her two sons. And they took them wives of the women of Moab. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other Ruth. And they dwelt there about 10 years. And Mahlon and Chilion died also, both of them, and the woman was left of her two sons and her husband. Then she arose with her daughters-in-law, that she might return from the country of Moab, for she had heard in the country of Moab how the Lord had visited his people and given them bread. Wherefore she went forth out of the place where she was, and her two daughters-in-law with her, and they went on the way to return unto the land of Judah. And Naomi said unto her two daughters-in-law, 'Go, return each to her mother's house. The Lord deal kindly with you as ye have dealt with the dead and with me. The Lord grant you that ye may find rest, each of you, in the house of her husband.' Then she kissed them, and they lifted up their voice and wept. And they said unto her, 'Surely we will return with thee unto thy people.' And Naomi said, 'Turn again, my daughters. Why will ye go with me? Are there yet any more sons in my womb, that they may be your husbands? Turn again, my daughters, go your way. For I am too old to have an husband. If I should say, I have hope, if I should have an husband also tonight and should also bear sons, would ye tarry for them till they were grown? Would ye stay for them from having husbands? Nay, my daughters, for it grieveth me much for your sakes that the hand of the Lord has gone out against me. And they lifted up their voice and wept again. And Orpah kissed her mother-in-law, but Ruth clave unto her. And she said, behold, thy sister-in-law is gone back unto her people and unto her gods. Return thou after thy sister-in-law. And Ruth said, entreat me not to leave thee, or to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go, and where thou lodgest, I will lodge. Thy people shall be my people, thy God my God. Where thou diest, will I die, and there will I be buried. The Lord do so to me, and more also, if aught but death part thee and me. When she saw that she was steadfastly minded to go with her, then she left speaking unto her. So they two went until they came to Bethlehem. And it came to pass, when they were come to Bethlehem, that all the city was moved about them. And they said, is this Naomi? And she said unto them, call me not Naomi, call me Mara, for the Almighty hath dealt very bitterly with me. I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. Why then call ye me Naomi, seeing the Lord hath testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me? So Naomi returned, and Ruth the Moabitess, her daughter-in-law, with her, which returned out of the country of Moab, and they came to Bethlehem in the beginning of barley harvest. It's a lot of detail that sheds some interesting light on the story of Ruth. First of all, it's the days of the judges ruled. What do you know about or remember about the days of the judges in the time of the judges? What kind of a period in Israel's history was this? Okay, and that kind of sums up the way that people were living. There's another verse earlier, in a couple chapters earlier in Judges, that says basically the same thing. I think there's one word that's different, but Judges 17:6 says almost exactly the same thing. They did what was right in their own eyes. So these days, I mean, the story of Ruth comes on the heels of the book of Judges that were some very bleak and spiritually dark days for the children of Israel.
So was it good for Elimelech to take his family from Judah?
Well, that's a fair question. What do you have to say to that? Anyone? The land of Moab was east of the Dead Sea, and Bethlehem was west of the Dead Sea. It's basically on either side of the Jordan River and Dead Sea, come between those two areas. Okay. That is brought out in Deuteronomy 7, the first several verses. They weren't to marry those in the land of Canaan. Okay, anything else? I wonder, in connection with Gary, with your comment that since these were very, overall, very spiritually dark times in Israel, that it maybe wasn't much darker in Moab than it was in Israel at the time. I don't know. Now, the one thing that I found interesting was as far as the Moabites, their religion, their God was the name of their God was Chemosh or Chemosh, I'm sure what the right correct pronunciation is of that. But it was essentially a demon god who was worshipped by sacrificing and burning children in his honor. So it was a dark, violent, destructive religious system, as the source that I read.
Well,
So when Naomi tells her daughters-in-law to return to the people and to their gods, that's quite a thing to return to. Anything else about that you would have to say about the land of Moab or them moving there in the first place, Gary? And it almost reads as though you could take from it that these two sons married the Moabite women after Elimelech passed away. I don't know if that's the way it was or not. But it does, verse 3 says that Elimelech died, and she was left her two sons, and they took wives of the women of Moab. The timetable of that, I guess I'm not certain on, but it could sound that way. The Moabites were also they were one of the nations that oppressed Israel. Someone care to read Judges 3:12? Volunteer for that. Judges 3:12. Go ahead whenever you're ready. Okay. So the Lord actually strengthened the hand of the enemy because of their wickedness. And then verse 14 of the same chapter says, so the children of Israel served Eglon, the king of Moab, 18 years. So it was a fairly lengthy time there. So this is the type of situation that they moved into. The time period, of course, after the judges and that range of years, approximately 1375 to 1050 BC, the author of the book is unknown. Some say it was Samuel, or would guess it to be Samuel. But again, it's not known. As we go on into this first chapter of interchange, then, we have Naomi trying to tell her daughters to return, her daughters-in-law to return, and them wanting to stay with her, at least initially. And it is interesting to see the two daughters-in-law did not take the same, didn't go the same direction. The one was more easily. Initially, they both wanted to stay, but then the one was convinced to go back and the other one was not. Apparently, there was, and I don't know if that hinged on the relationship that Naomi had with them or what all came to play there. Maybe Ruth had seen enough of the Moabites' heathen worship, what she grew up with, what she knew. Um, some ideas. What do you have to say on that? On the interchange that Naomi has with her two daughters-in-law. Well, and the other thing that I came across too was they were not allowed to worship in the tabernacle in their Deuteronomy 23. Someone volunteered to read Deuteronomy 23, 3 through 6. Go ahead whenever you've got it. So, again, they weren't, there's some fairly strong language used, and they didn't help children of Israel out when they came out of Egypt. They didn't help them out, and so that was the reason for them not entering the congregation of the Lord. Put on that, I hadn't come across that. I might just ask Connor to repeat it from a little louder from the back. Interesting.
But it says at the end of this book that the sons of Obed, the father of Jesse, the father of David. I don't have 10 generations there unless this is somehow abbreviated. This is an interesting subject. It isn't that God didn't want foreigners to become followers of Him. In Exodus, I think we have
Yeah, appreciate that. Marvin. Appreciate that. That's helpful. Well, let's move on to the next chapter. There's a lot more that we could maybe before we move on to the next chapter. The last several verses, Naomi comes back to Bethlehem, and apparently she was well known, or the people knew well who she was, and all the city was moved about them. And that's in an era where men had a lot more visibility publicly than ladies did, but everyone took notice. And but she didn't want to be called Naomi. Naomi means pleasant. Mara means bitter. And she didn't. I think she was grappling with the reality of her situation, the reality of the pain that she was going through. The difficulty that she had gone through with losing her husband and sons. Some of this sort of reminds me of Job and his experience. But she was, it almost sounds cynical, or maybe cynical isn't the right word, but very, she was still grieving deeply, and it was not an easy thing for her to come back. And I'm sure coming back to Bethlehem brought back a lot of memories too of her husband. But she says, "The Lord has testified against me, and the Almighty hath afflicted me." So she was grappling with that. Any input on that before we move on to the next chapter? Okay, next chapter then is a new scene. The gleaning comes into play here, and all throughout the Bible, it's God's heart for widows, orphans, those less fortunate comes through, and this gleaning law really was a way of God's way of providing for these people. Have volunteered to read Leviticus 19, verses 9 and 10. Leviticus 19, 9 and 10. Okay. And Deuteronomy 24, 19 to 21. Okay. And go ahead and read those when you have them. And Deuteronomy 24, 19 to 21. Quite what I had in mind there. I'm not sure. I must have written down the wrong reference. Leviticus 23:22 is the last one here. Okay. Okay, so again, God's heart for the widows, for the poor. We would say today that's not being that we're not being good stewards of of the crop we're raising if we wouldn't cut the corners. But in this era, in this setting, they were supposed to leave it for those who couldn't provide, or who were widows, or etc. And it's into this, it's into this provision of the law that Ruth takes a part of. And I thought it was interesting that Ruth, it was Ruth's idea. She said to Naomi, "Let me go to the field and glean. Let me do this, and see what I can do. See if I can provide for our needs here." And she had Naomi's blessing to go, and she went, came, and gleaned in the field after the reapers, and her hap was to light on a part of the field belonging unto Boaz. Another way of saying "and her hap was to light upon" is it was she happened to find herself. I don't think we have an indication that she tried to find Boaz's field, and that's where it was. I noticed it was interesting when Boaz came from Bethlehem and to the reapers. He said, "The Lord be with you," and they answered, "The Lord bless thee." I thought that interchange to me indicated a good employer-employee relationship. It was seems like a mutual respect there. And as we well know, he asked who Ruth was, and they said, and goes on to tell her not to go anywhere else to glean, but to stay there, and that he had instructed his young men to leave her alone. And apparently, it was somewhat dangerous to do it to do this gleaning. Probably because there were more gleaners than what there was available to glean. So his comment, he's instructed those to leave her alone, and not only leave her alone, but to leave extra for her, let some extra go. And so he was actually going beyond the law in that regard. He wasn't just skipping the corners. He was also saying, let some fall down on purpose for her. What would you like to share, questions or whatever, on the gleaning, the practice of gleaning here? Orin? Yeah, they're working for what they get. Yeah, okay. It's true. And it was hard work for no more than they got. Okay. She ends up gleaning to the evening and then beating it out. About an ephah of barley, and I don't know what your Bibles would say. Half a bushel is what mine said. An ephah of barley comes to. Goes home, and of course her mother-in-law wants to know what happened and how she ended up, where she ended up with. And Boaz not only said, leave her alone this today, but he told her to come back and don't go anywhere else. And the harvest, we understand it was a barley harvest and a wheat harvest, so there was two back to back, so approximately 2 months worth of harvesting. And in verse 20, Naomi says she recognizes God's hand, and the impression I get that, in contrast to the end of chapter 1, that maybe she's starting to see God bring good out of her despair and her the things that had taken place in her life. God was still looking after them. Moving on then to the third chapter. Before we go into that, there's two other customs that we come across then. The one is the custom of the lever, which is basically marrying a childless widow in order to maintain the lineage of a late husband. And let's take the time to read Deuteronomy 25, 5 through 10. Deuteronomy 25, 5 through 10. If brethren dwell together and one of them die and have no child, the wife of the dead shall not marry without unto a stranger. Her husband's brother shall go in unto her and take her to him to wife and perform the duty of an husband's brother unto her. And it shall be that the firstborn which she beareth shall succeed in the name of his brother which is dead, that his name be not put out of Israel. And if the man like not to take his brother's wife, then let his brother's wife go up into the gate unto the elders and say, my husband's brother refuses to raise up unto his brother a name in Israel. He will not perform the duty of a husband's brother. Then the elders of the city shall call him and speak unto him, and if he stand to it and say, I like not to take her, then shall his brother's wife come unto him in the presence of the elders and loose his shoe from off his foot and spit in his face, and shall answer and say, so shall it be done unto that man that will not build up his brother's house. And his name shall be called in Israel the house of him that hath his shoe loosed. So it was a serious matter not to follow through. If you didn't want to follow through, the lady could take your shoe off and spit in your face, and it went with you. Everyone knew about it. Then there's also the thing of the term Goel, with the kinsman redeemer, and that was. That also then, that included the purchasing back for the family what had been lost. And so sometimes what would happen is that if a widow would have to sell land or in order to survive, a kinsman redeemer could buy that back and retain that land then for the family heritage. But there were three criteria that had to be met to be the kinsman redeemer. He had to be a relative. He had to have the means to pay the entire debt that was owed by the widow and her family, and he had to have the power to remove anyone who wanted family to stay on the. To remove anyone who wanted to stay on the widow's property, so if someone was leasing the land or borrowing it or whatever, and he would buy back the land, he had to. This kinsman redeemer would have to have the power to move them off if he wanted to. So it wasn't a small thing. So with that backdrop, then going on into the third chapter, Naomi's her instructions to Ruth. There's some discrepancy, or not discrepancy, but discussion on whether that was an appropriate thing for her to ask her to do or not. She was asked to basically to wash thyself, anoint thee, perfume, put your raiment, put on good clothes, and go down at night after this man has been eaten and drunk and maybe even slightly intoxicated. Basically, this is being done in the secret, not in public view. Like all the times that Ruth was gleaning, would have been in public, in the public place with all the other workers. This is being done in private. But whether or not she had good motivations or not for this, the thing that I noticed was that when she does follow through with this, that her first response to Boaz is basically that of it's calling him to his obligation under the law. It's not a, it wasn't underhanded. It was, this is your spiritual responsibility. This is what the law says. It calls him back to that. Spread your skirt over your handmaid, which even today, I guess, Jews often get married under a canopy, which is a symbol of that, spreading over the skirt. What input do you have on that first section there? The other thing that comes out too in this is the is Boaz's integrity. He acknowledges. First, he says she's very kind, and even more so than that at the beginning. And basically says, alludes to the fact that he may be older than she is, because he said you could have gone after young men, but you're coming to me. But he says that, don't worry, I will do everything that's required here. And all the city, the people doth know that thou art a virtuous woman. And so here's a Moabite woman that the people of Bethlehem recognize as a virtuous woman. And I think that's why, at least part of the reason why he wanted to send her away before light, so there wouldn't be any no one could second guess anything that took place. And he promised that he would look into the kinsman redeemer part of things. And not only that, but of course send her back with more grain to continue to provide for her. So he goes to the city gate, and chapter 4, and the phrase "ho such a one," apparently, it was a way of leaving out the name of the Boaz. Obviously, knew who it was. He knew who to go to that was a nearer kinsman than he was. And so there again, that was his integrity coming out. He could have told Ruth, yeah, I'll go ahead and marry you. Of course, I want to do that. But no, he knew that there was a nearer kinsman that had first responsibility. So this phrase, ho such and one, Zeisler says in his book that his feeling is that the name is intentionally left out. Because it was, if you remember back the verses in Deuteronomy that talk about the shoe being taken off and spit in their face if they don't do, if they don't take the responsibility, that because it was such a, considered an irresponsible thing to do to not do this, that may have been why we don't have the name of the man who refused to take responsibility. Not a major point, but interesting nonetheless. And I also found it interesting too that he essentially gives part of the picture and then the man, yeah, he'll do that, he'll take some more land, sure, but then finishes out, no, you need to also take Ruth as your wife. And then he backs off and says, you know, that he doesn't want to jeopardize his inheritance and doesn't want to, and is possibly afraid of the stigma of marrying a Moabite woman. I don't know, But he wasn't willing to pursue it at that point. Do you have any input on their interchange, Boaz's interchange with the elders in this kinsman redeemer process? Well, moving on then, this again was sealed or verified by taking off his shoe, and he obviously had the means to buy what was Elimelech's and the sons, and essentially was not only taking responsibility for Ruth, but also for Naomi. And the people's response is interesting and a little bit puzzling, maybe. And I wonder what your input is on that. Their response was, "Well, the Lord make the woman that has come into thy house like Rachel and Leah, which two did build the house of Israel," and etc. Why were they wanting her to be like the house of Rachel and Leah? Paul?
Was it simply showing their acceptance of Ruth into the
shore? Okay, that's a good possibility. I hadn't thought of that. Interesting. And you know, Rachel and Leah, that's where it's Jacob's wives, and that's where that major lineage comes down from. The other interesting thing with the lineage thing is that let the house be like the house of Pharaoh, whom Tamar bare unto Judah, and That's not a pleasant story at all, the way that went. Again, it was also the kinsman redeemer type of situation. In that situation, Tamar's first husband Ur was and Judah's son was wicked enough that God killed him, slew him. Bible says God slew him because he was so wicked. The next son, Onan, didn't want to be with Tamar, didn't want to raise seed up to his brother. So God took care of him too. She was promised the youngest son, Shelah, but then Judah says I'm afraid to give him because I'm afraid he's going to die too. So, and then of course the very sad way that all ended up, that with Judah fathering Tamar's twins, and then Pharaoh's was one of the twins. So you have way back at the beginning in the tribe of Judah, you have this ugly situation from the very beginning. But again, God redeemed that, and it was through the line of Pharaoh's, and as we see at the end of the chapter here, Hezron, Ram, Amminadab, Nahshon, Salmon, and then Boaz, and then not only Boaz, but then bringing in Ruth the Moabite to Obed, Jesse, and David. And of course, David was one of the greatest kings of Israel's history. Just amazing to me how messed up it was way back at the beginning of Judah's line, and yet God still used that, used those mistakes, used those unfortunate situations in the line of Jesus. Any input or additions that you want to make to that, or help you would give for that, with that, or corrections? Well, Well, we're almost at closing here. I'd like to just review just a few of the character traits of Naomi, Ruth, and Boaz, and then some of the overall themes that we can take home and apply. Naomi was one who trusted God. A character trait of she felt bitter, which was wouldn't have been good to stay there, but she ended up seeing God's hand later on. She was unselfish. She sent her daughters back, tried to send her daughters back, even though she could have used their help. And there's more that we could add to that. Ruth was loyal, as was mentioned before, hardworking, and also unselfish, brave in a foreign land, humble enough to do the dirty work, but faithful in the menial tasks of gleaning. Boaz was a kind and generous man, one of integrity, moral integrity, and he kept his word. He was gracious to his employees, he was dependable, and showed himself to be a spiritual leader as well in the way he carried out the kinsman redeemership. Then just, I noticed here in the last week, one of the books in the back, the title is The Grand Weaver, I think by Ravi Zacharias. And I thought that fits when you think of the way that God brought all this together. God really is a grand weaver. Larry Crabb in his book says that shattered dreams are the prelude to joy, and that really does fit with this story. The dreams of Naomi and Ruth had been shattered. They had known much grief, but joy came in the end. And this is just a side note back to some of the last verses that I thought was interesting, that it mentions that Ruth, or that Naomi held this child in her lap. Just a kind of a sweet end to that part of it, to the story. And the other thing I'd like to say with the things that we can learn from it, and a reminder through the story of Ruth, is that two things. One is that God can bring great blessings out of sorrow and calamity. And he can take, and secondly, he can take our mistakes, he can take our difficult situations, our deep sorrows, whatever they may be, and if we give them to him, he can still fulfill the plan that he has. He used a lot of less than desirable situations to bring about Christ's line, and he can continue to bring good out of difficult times in our lives. Let's close with a song, and following that, I'd ask Dwight to lead in prayer.